The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Against Iran. You posted on your social a few weeks ago.
We don't need
Why do I need it?
Why would a stupid question like that be asked?
Why would I use
a nuclear weapon when we've totally, in a very conventional way, decimated them without it? No, I wouldn't use it. A nuclear weapon should never be allowed to be used by anybody.
Germany's defense minister has announced plans to build what he calls Europe's strongest conventional army, presenting a national military strategy for the first time together with other defense officials.
The guiding principle is to have at least a total of 460,000 operational personnel, both active service and reserve forces. One thing is clear, and this is already foreseeable today, automation and artificial intelligence will inevitably continue to have an impact on our planning. How many soldiers will we then need, and what qualifications will they require? Our ambition is, and must be, as stated by the Chancellor and as I myself believe, to have the strongest conventional army in Europe.
They're calling it European NATO. It's the fallback plan allies are working on if Donald Trump follows through on his threat to pull out of the military alliance. The US president has made no secret of his disdain for NATO, especially after nobody joined his war on Iran. So, what would a European-only force actually look like?
The European NATO would see a shift towards the continent taking on more leadership roles and to accelerate Europe's production of military hardware to maintain deterrence against Russia.
War and rumors of more war. It's just in the dialogue almost constantly. You're going to use nukes or not going to use nukes? Europe's getting ready to go it alone once NATO is completely finished. I was watching the Bible reading as it goes on in D.C. this week. They're getting closer to the New Testament. We're going to grab some sound bites of commentators reading from the Olivet Prophecy. I mean, all of this is building toward Great Tribulation. We produced a program on the Olivet Prophecy last week. I guess it plays this weekend, actually. So you can be looking for that on this weekend's Key of David. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at thetrumpet.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. Also, we've got a channel at YouTube as well. Appreciate our producers subbing in for me on yesterday's show. I guess you got to see one of the Life and Teachings episodes or podcasts that we've been producing as well. So lots of content being generated by thetrumpet.com and by the editorial team, the TV department, because there's so much to talk about. I believe Mr. Livingston commented on the new musical, Lamentations of Jeremiah. It's hard to believe. I was kind of laughing, not real loud, but a year and a half ago, as our music director often does, he plans things well in advance. And I thought, well, that's a long time off, a year and a half or so. They're all going to be just in perfect pitch, having had all those practices and such. And I mean, like with anything in God's work, it's always a rush to the finish line. But the Choral Union, Armstrong College Choral Union, they've been working hard with their weekly practices now for the last many months. And everything culminates in the afternoon showing this Sunday. If you'd like to get tickets, I think there's still maybe a couple hundred seats available in the auditorium. Just go to armstrongauditorium.org. But if you live far away, you can also go to that same website and figure out how to live stream the event. Some really amazing music will be playing in God's house Sunday afternoon. So that's Lamentations of Jeremiah put on by the Herbert W. Armstrong College Choral Union. We've got some special singers that are coming in, as well as some locals here, and to make up for all of the instruments that we need to accompany the Choral Union. So that's at armstrongauditorium.org. So President Trump insists that he's not being rushed. He keeps bringing up Vietnam or, you know, previous wars that went on for years and years and years. And he's saying, that's a good point. You know, it's only been going for 5 or 6 weeks. This was President Trump in the Oval Office yesterday, clip 4.
How long are you willing to wait until you get a...
Well, don't rush me. Don't rush me, Jeff. You know, guys like you, you want to say, oh, so we're in Vietnam like for 18 years. We're in Iraq for many, many years. We're in for all the... I don't like to say World War II because that was a biggie. But we were 4.5, almost 5 years in World War II. We were in the Korean War for 7 years. I've been doing this for 6 weeks. And their military is totally defeated. We have no pressure. It's only guys like you with a question like that about what's your time? We've been doing it for 5.5 weeks.
You know, when you just, he gave you a list. And as I made this point earlier this week, I mean, just the fact that you're supposedly ending 9 or 10 wars tells you all that you need to know about the world we're living in. There are wars everywhere. And then he's going down through our history just since World War II. Wars that went on for years. So don't rush me. Don't rush me. He tweeted this out. For those people fewer in number now than ever before that are reading the failing New York Times or watching fake news CNN, that think that I'm anxious to end the war, if you can even call it that, with Iran, please be advised that I am possibly the least pressured person ever to be in this position. Not anxious at all. I'm not in a hurry. It's probably another tweet that didn't really need to be said. This is, again, from the Oval Office yesterday, clip 8.
It's amazing what we've done. So I've done that within that period of time that I mentioned, but I don't want to rush myself, you know, because every story says, oh, Trump is under time pressure. I'm not. No, no. You know who's under time pressure? They are. Because if they don't get their oil moving, their whole oil infrastructure is going to explode. You know what that means? Because they have no place to store it. So I'm not under any pressure whatsoever. We've never had so much ammunition. Our ships are loaded. I call them locked and loaded. They're locked and loaded. They're ready to go. We have much higher quality equipment than we did when we first started the war and or the military operation, whatever you want to call it.
There's this, you just put all the statements together. And I mean, yes, it's only been 5-6 weeks, but as I noted earlier this week, I mean, the back and forth, closed, open, finished, obliterated, not finished. Don't rush me. This will be over quickly, but don't rush me. Neil Ferguson, I had this Wednesday and we just didn't have time to get to it, but he writes about the gap between truth, social, and reality on Iran. You've got all of these bombastic statements, provocative statements that the president is regularly tweeting. But what is the reality on the ground? Do they square? And, you know, we went through with our notes preparation on Wednesday just how often you see reality. It's very different than, you know, how it's presented. It's very different from the narrative. And we're going to see a lot more of that before this is over. That point, you know, in the, I forget which show it was, Monday or Tuesday, but just the rumors of war. I mean, that tells you that sometimes it's actual war. Sometimes it's a rumor, but all the talk, all the commentary, Europe building up a fighting force now, commentators talking about NATO as if it's done, it's finished, it's over. How does NATO become such a huge, huge element of this story, the war with Iran? This is clip number 6.
Excuse me, what do you say to the American people who question how much longer this will take. Obviously, we know that they are having
You're such a disgrace. Did you hear what I just said? Vietnam. How many years was Vietnam?
I understand, sir.
How many years was Vietnam? Well, I did my yet. I took the country out militarily in the first 4 weeks. I took it out militarily. Now what we're doing is sitting back and seeing what deal. And if they don't want to make a deal, then I'll finish it up militarily with the other 25% of the targets. We've hit 78% of the targets that we've wanted to hit.
So total obliteration. And then the one we skipped, actually number 8, goes into just the, as he sees it anyway, the unlimited supply of ammunition that the U.S. has. This is number 8.
It's amazing what we've done. So I've done that within that period of time that I mentioned, but I don't want to rush myself, you know, because every source, Trump is under time pressure. I'm not. No. You know who's under time pressure? They are. Because if they don't get their oil moving, their whole oil infrastructure is going to explode. You know what that means? Because they have no place to store it. So I'm not under any pressure whatsoever. We've never had so much ammunition. Our ships are loaded. I call them locked and loaded. They're locked and loaded. They're ready to go. We have much higher quality equipment than we did when we first started the war and or the military operation, whatever you want to call it.
So we played that previously. But the point about unlimited ammunition, this is from the New York Times. And again, the Times, the failing New York Times, as President Trump calls it, they have it in for Trump. They're certainly, they've got a case, a pretty strong case of Trump derangement syndrome. But just the reality, I mean, every missile you fire off, it costs what, tens of millions of dollars to produce? The Times says since the Iran war began in late February, the U.S. has burned through around 1,100 of its long-range stealth cruised missiles built for a war with China, close to the total number remaining in the U.S. stockpile. So about half. We've burned through about half the missiles that we have. The military has fired off more than 1,000 Tomahawk cruise missiles, roughly 10 times the number it currently buys each year. The Pentagon used more than 1,200 Patriot interceptor missiles in the war at more than 4 million a pop, and more than 1,000 precision strike and ATCAMS ground-based missiles, leaving inventories low, according to the Defense Department. It just takes you through the numbers. I mean, this is the reality of war. We've talked before about just how expensive it is to wage war, how expensive it is to win a war. Patriot interceptor missiles can cost nearly $4 million each. The U.S. produced about 600 of them in 2025. More than 1,200 have been used in the war so far, according to the Pentagon. So it just goes through, this article does, every category of ammunition, showing that our supplies are dwindling. It's not like it's a shock, or it shouldn't be. We're using a lot. And what are we getting in return? Because it certainly is an unconditional surrender. As I say, the narratives, they're changing almost every hour. The reality on the ground doesn't always square with, you know, the social media posts. Wars and rumors of wars. It says here, White House officials have refused to estimate the cost of the conflict so far, but two independent groups say the expense is staggering, between $28 billion and $35 billion, or just under $1 billion per day. $1 billion per day. My producer just scared me over there. He's lurking in the dark. What happened? Did the background go away?
Yeah, TV just turned off.
Oh, no. Try
to figure that out for you.
That's okay. This says here, White House official, $1 billion per day. And then further on, it says, the conflict has underscored the Pentagon's over-reliance on excessively expensive missiles and munitions. This is all part of the push-button warfare. We recorded a program earlier on just the I've talked about this before, too, the paradox of the world we're living in today. Yes, it's spectacular when you look at, you know, push button warfare, or when you look at spaceships circling the moon. It's unbelievable, really, when you think about what man has been able to produce. The technology that's there at our disposal. Well, all of it is incredibly expensive, too. And it's amazing how much, when the technology is used for weapons of war, it's amazing how quickly millions, even billions, go up in flames. That's what they're for. They're to kill people, or they're to destroy power plants or bridges or whatever it is. Missiles. Missiles shooting at other missiles. The conflict underscored the Pentagon's over-reliance on excessively expensive missiles and munitions. We've got to rely on these expensive weapons because we can't put boots on the ground. We can't spend actual blood. So we just spend tens of millions of dollars, billions of dollars. This is breaking the back of America, as if America even has the funding to pay for this. We just dig deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. The military is also incurring unexpected costs from damaged or destroyed aircraft. In the Navy SEAL Team 6 operation to rescue a downed Air Force officer in Iran, the military had to destroy two MC-130 cargo planes and at least three helicopters inside of them after the plane's nose gear got stuck in the wet sand of a makeshift airstrip. So when problems emerge, when things go wrong, that's expensive. I mean, this is, I don't know how much bias or agenda works its way into the stats here, but I mean, these are statistics. These are the realities of war. This is the excessive cost. At current production rates, reconstituting what we have expended could take years. So maybe this is where the bias comes in, where they get commentators to say just how bad this is. Well, I suppose the production companies could kick into gear and maybe you could shorten that time frame. But listen, even as all this is going on, you've got a story every other week about the factories in Germany, the factories in Europe, switching over from, you know, vehicles to weapons of war. And nobody even bats an eye at this. This is just ho-hum. Another day in German industry as they ramp things up, getting ready for war. The world is arming itself for war. America is in no position to produce all of these replacements that it's going to need. Here again, Leviticus 26:20, it says that we'll spend our strength in vain. What happens when we've spent billions and billions and billions? And then you don't even get, you know, unconditional surrender out of it? Maybe you set the nuke program back a few years. Here's another narrative. It's fake. I played the clip the other day, President Trump saying how reasonable this new regime is. You know, the son, who's even more of a hardliner than the father. And now that's the Trump administration is trying to sell that as, well, we accomplished regime change because everybody died. Everybody got killed. And now the son's in there, or at least he's supposed to be. It is a little murky in the fog of war. But this is not going to end well. And meanwhile, as I say, you've got to keep your eyes on Europe. This is just one more from the Oval Office yesterday, clip 9.
I'm not asking anybody for more time.
If you need more time, does that mean Americans should anticipate spending more on gasoline for the foreseeable future?
For a little while. And you know what they get for that? You know what they get for that? Iran without a nuclear weapon that's going to try and blow up one of our cities or blow up the entire Middle East. You want to see what shock would be? And I have to be honest, the stock market is at an all-time high right now.
Right.
I thought it would have been down 20-25%.
So everything's going great. And the reporters, of course, continually badgering him. When's it going to finish? You know, when's it over? It's gone on 5-6 weeks now. This article, speaking of Europe, what's happening in Europe, it's in Al Monitor. EU to prepare blueprint for mutual assistance pact amid NATO doubts. And this, I mean, this whole article is couched in abstract and legalistic language. But really, if you read between those lines, what you're reading is actually shocking. It should be. I mean, this should give us a jolt. I mean, you talk about the statistics in America's weapons of war, our dwindling supplies, and then you look at the very same time, you look at what's happening in Europe. This article, it says here, EU leaders have asked officials to prepare a blueprint for how the bloc's previously obscure mutual assistance clause would work. I mean, they want to make it more specific. There's always been this general understanding, because NATO's there, that, well, if one member's attacked, then the others rise in defense of the one that's attacked. But now we've got to be more specific. They want an action plan. Worries about President Trump's criticism of NATO for failing to back the war with Iran, along with his threats earlier this year to seize Greenland and from ally Denmark, have created greater urgency to define the EU's mutual assistance provisions. It says later, we agreed last night that the European Commission will prepare a blueprint on how we respond in case a member state triggers Article 42.7. It says further down, unlike NATO's Article 5, Collective Defense Pact, which is seen as the bedrock of European security, the EU's mutual assistance clause is not backed by detailed operational plans or military structures. And so they're having to lock it in with greater specificity. They're going forward as if NATO's no longer going to be an option. This is alarming stuff. This is America leaving the German-led European continent to go it alone. Now, President Trump, as you heard him, he just rattled off all of these wars in just the last 80 years. Our heads are just completely in the sand. This is from Deutsche Welle on Germany's plans, again, to lead this operation. Clip 3.
Germany will grow the force from a current 185,000 soldiers to 260,000, plus they want a massive reserve of 200,000, and so that would then create 460,000 deployable troops. And they've also given themselves not just this plan, but also a strategy, and that shifts from counting tanks to essentially focusing on impact, on effects. So they want to have long-range precision strike. They want air and missile defense, drones and cyber. But the measures also included ideas to cut red tape and modernize the German army.
The new German war machine, going back to the Atlantic from, what, last November, December? And then you have this, Germany's leading the way and everybody's encouraging it. Nothing to be alarmed by. This is Ursula von der Leyen. She's at a Cyprus summit briefing. And basically, you know, again, like every world leader, we're calling for peace. But you listen to who she mentions and such, and it's basically the now forming Psalm 83 alliance. Everybody's being drawn in. Wars and rumors of war. This is clip 10.
So we call for the respect of Lebanon's sovereignty and territorial integrity. A temporary pause is not enough. We need a permanent path to peace. And on the way, we will continue to support the Lebanese people. In times of crisis, bonds grow stronger. Because we are not just partners in managing crisis, we are partners for the future. And this is why we held recently our first ever summits with Jordan and Egypt, and are reinforcing our strategic and comprehensive partnerships. In January this year, we announced a new political partnership with you, President al-Shara, with Syria. Earlier this week, we have proposed resuming the EU-Syria cooperation agreement. And in 2 weeks, we will host the first high-level political dialogue between Syria and the European Union, paving the way for a possible future association agreement. Turning to the Gulf countries, last week, the Secretary General of the GCC and I agreed that our partnership needs to become a broader geopolitical partnership. The EU-GCC summit later this year, I think, gives us the opportunity to do exactly this. We are also ready to team up with the Gulf countries to diversify export infrastructure away from solely the bottleneck of the Hormuz Strait.
It's all perfect, isn't it? Perfect cover. America takes the lead. America hits Iran hard. America spends about half of its ammo. Europe doesn't join the effort. Europe doesn't support the effort. Europe denounces Orange Hitler. Trump is very upset. He doesn't like NATO anymore. And meanwhile, I mean, as the U.S. continues on with this operation, this war, Europe is able to prepare. Europe is able to observe, to watch, to form alliances. They're coming into the Middle East with a show of force, a whirlwind of force. That's what Daniel 11:40 says. They're not going to be on the sidelines forever. I mean, you can just dismiss it and say, this is not ever going to be serious. They don't have it in them. Too many bureaucrats. It's coming. Your Bible says it's building to great tribulation. And President Trump, I mean, you heard it in the cold open. He can talk all he wants about the nukes should never be used by any nation. But the truth is something much, much more horrific. These incredible, technologically advanced weapons of warfare, they've been used. Man creates them to be used. And he will use them. That's why Matthew 24 says that God has to intervene to save us from ourselves. It's only been since the end of World War II that man has even had the technology that could conceivably destroy all of human civilization. So here's where we are. And okay, of course, we're not going to use nukes. How dare you ask the question? We've destroyed them with conventional warfare, with conventional weapons. I mean, is that something we can brag about? We've only used the bombs that are a little bit smaller, not quite as explosive, not quite as powerful. You have to give President Trump some credit for at least standing up to the King of the South. But the bigger point, as I keep saying, the bigger point is that we're living in a war. We're living in a world filled with wars and rumors of wars. Everything intersects with the Olivet prophecy, as we've said. Everything is connected. Melanie Phillips. The dawn of a new world order. Yes, we're entering into a new age. A new world order. Most people in America are against the war with Iran, as they are in Britain too. Very few, however, actually understand why this war is as necessary as it is unavoidably complex. You hear it from the reporters. You know, why should we go beyond 5-6 weeks? Don't rush me, says President Trump. Few seem aware that Iran has been actively at war against America for the past 47 years. I mean, you hear that when you tune into the Trumpet Daily. But most people, most of President Trump's critics, whether here in America or in Europe, they just pretend like Iran hasn't been at war with America for 47 years. They turn a blind eye to the terrorism, to the death, the carnage, the murder, the kidnappings. 47 years. Few, it says, grasp that U.S. and Israeli intelligence had discovered that Iran was poised to create both a nuclear bomb and had and a missile arsenal so enormous and so buried underground that no one would have ever been able to tackle the mortal threat posed by the regime. Remember that before the war? President Trump's people said, we're just weeks away. We were weeks away from them getting the bomb. And as he kept saying, I mean, once they get it, they're going to use it. They're going to use it. So what kind of world? When you have a U.S. president saying, we're never going to use nukes. No nation should use nukes. And oh, by the way, Iran nearly got one. They would have used it. That's just the world we're living in. There are plenty of madmen to go around. There's a madman out there that's quite happy about pushing that button. More push-button warfare. More, even bigger, even more expensive missiles. Man's going to use them. The dawn of a new world order. It says, instead, the American British public have been fed a remorseless mainstream media narrative framed entirely by obsessive hatred of Donald Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. This presents the war as a reckless choice into which Trump was bounced by Netanyahu, that it was always going to be a disaster and that it's already been lost. I mean, you think about how many commentators, they want America to lose. But then you look at the history, besides World War II, President Trump rattled them all off in that clip I played. Mr. Armstrong makes the point in U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. Why is America not winning wars anymore? What happened? Well, Leviticus 26, verses 19 and 20, that's what happened. I'll read it to you. God says, I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. And the thought continues, and your strength shall be spent in vain. It says, for your land shall not yield her increase, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruits. A dire prophecy. Strength. So there is strength. There's even strength that's spent, but it's spent in vain. In other words, it doesn't produce. It doesn't produce victories. It doesn't claim victories. Melanie Phillips says, America's blockade of the strait is causing Tehran to lose hundreds of millions of dollars a day in vital revenue, while the buildup of oil will potentially cripple the oil wells themselves and put them out of further use. The fact is that this war is neither won nor lost. Both sides say they have the upper hand. Everything depends on Trump. You know, how's this going to play out? It's a test of will. And you, as I say, he's got to go at it with those reporters every day. They want to see President Trump fail. They want to see America lose. They're portraying Trump as the, you know, the one that's going on the offensive, the one who's a warmonger, or if not him, Bibi, or both of them together. Melanie says, it's very alarming that opposition to the war in America is feeding into a growing general public animus against Israel. This is something we've been following closely as well. It is alarming that there could be this kind of Jew hatred, so much of it, and that the mullahs would pretty much get a pass. They're seen as the victims. Israel's governing class is all too aware of this deeply troubling American trajectory. It says concern about Trump's successor has meant that Israel has begun to develop its own arms industry to reduce its dependency on the U.S. Well, welcome to the club. It's getting more members with each passing week. Europe, I mean, they've changed the factories over to war-making machines. And now Israel, for its part, we don't know what's going to happen after Trump, so We better get some other alliances going. I mean, it doesn't mention Germany by name, but it should. They've already entered into a pact for defense. Germany and Israel, of all things. These two. It says here, whatever the eventual outcome of the Iran war, it's clear that Israel has become the main regional power in the Middle East. It says this is an inflection point for civilization, and Israel is poised to become the fulcrum of a new world order. Israel, it says finally, is very concerned that it may be losing America. America should be no less concerned that it's losing Israel. This is the new world order that we're entering into, and of course the Bible talks about that brotherhood unraveling. The Bible talks about, in the book of Hosea, little Israel turning to Assyria or Germany. All of these things are beginning to happen. Well, I already touched on the Neil Ferguson bit about just the growing disparity between reality and fantasy. And you certainly see that on display with respect to the war with Iran. When we come back, I'll just give you a few snippets from the recent program we recorded on the great paradox of our day. We also have this week's installment of World Watch to look forward to as well. Lots to squeeze in the last 15 minutes or so. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Celtic Throne is back on tour. This summer, 15 cities, 8 states, one unforgettable experience. Experience this revolutionary new show, an electrifying fusion of Irish dance, music, theatre and cinema. Experience the show audiences worldwide are raving about.
Absolutely fantastic. I've seen the Riverdance and the Lord of the Dance, and they were amazing. These blew me away.
Absolutely marvellous. And I've been to see Riverdance about 5 times, and this is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I love it.
It's thrilling. It stands at the side of Lord of the Dance and Riverdance, its equal partner.
Absolutely stunning. Absolutely incredible. Not in my wildest dream did I think that it could compare to the other shows, but it was amazing, amazing.
My favourite show I've been to ever, and I've been to Riverdance, Lord of the Dance, just my favourite. It was amazing.
Love it. It was amazing. Best experience ever.
Don't miss your opportunity to experience the trailblazing new Irish dance show capturing the hearts of audiences all over the world. Get show and ticket information at CelticThrone.com.
We're in a world of awesome progress today. The progress in this world, the things that the world has accomplished and done are absolutely awesome. On the other hand, we're seeing in the world appalling troubles and evils. Troubles and evils that man is unable to solve. In spite of our ability to fly men to the moon and back and come board around up there on the moon and send back live pictures that we can see in our own living rooms on television of them cavorting around on the moon, leaping, and they take a higher leap up there because of very little gravity. Why this paradox? Why is it we're able to do such awesome things and still the world is in such trouble? Why is everybody against everybody? Why is it husband and wife can't get along? Parents can't get along with children or children with parents. Families can't get along with next door neighbor. Now man can go to the moon and back, but man can't seem to solve his problems and his troubles. Why? What's the matter with the human mind?
Such a basic foundational point that he made over and again. He made it in The Missing Dimension in Sex. The first 7 chapters of this book, by the way, are largely about education. the missing dimension in education. We can't understand why marriage, why sex, why anything. Because we're so far removed from God, His law, His purpose, His plan. This other booklet we've produced, Education with Vision. I mean, my father's been talking about this for many, many years as well. It goes way back. But how many preachers do you hear today talking about what's wrong with man? What's wrong with the human mind? And we talk about it all the time. And we back it with scriptures like Jeremiah 17:9 and Romans 8:7. There's many, many more. Jesus talked about what comes out of the heart of man. It's not good. Why? Why is there so much evil? Why, on the one hand, you produce a spaceship that can circle the moon? And with the same kind of technology, you produce a nuclear bomb. There was a race to produce atomic bombs at the end of World War II. That's what it took to finally end the Second World War. Two entire cities obliterated because of a bomb that man dropped on top of man. It's happened before, and it's going to happen again, and it's not like that's a pleasant message to deliver, but, I mean, Jesus in the Olivet Prophecy said great tribulation was coming. And if not for God's intervention, there'd be no flesh saved alive. That you can't get a stronger message than that. That's just a few days before Jesus was crucified. This article, we hand this out in Principles of Living. Knowledge has doubled, so have troubles. Why? That's an article Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1970. 56 years ago, what would he say about the knowledge explosion today? How long have iPhones been around? What, 10 or 15 years? I mean, you can carry around the Library of Congress pretty much on your phone. All of this knowledge, all of this progress. And yet something just dreadfully wrong with man, with the heart of man. This is from my father's Key of David show from back in 2008, almost 20 years ago, clip 13.
The knowledge we have today is not curing our evils or preventing new ones. Something is wrong with our knowledge. Something is wrong with our education. And you know what it is? Well, they just close their eyes to the great Creator God, who gave us a book telling us how to live, the foundation of all knowledge. Sure, there's more knowledge, and we have to figure out certain things ourselves, but here's the foundation. This is the foundation. And if you don't build on that, you're going to face human extinction. And you're going to face all kinds of problems that you cannot solve.
The Bible's our instruction manual. It's the how-to book, how to live God's way. What happens when man rejects that way of life, like Adam and Eve did in Genesis 2, Genesis 3. What happens? We're living in a world that's about to explode, and what a grave mistake it would be to be deceived into thinking the world's just getting better and better and improving because of some technological device, because of a screen or some kind of a push-button technology. President Trump, when that spaceship, Artemis II, circled the moon 250,000 miles from Earth. And here were these four human beings just giddy with delight. This is unbelievable. Look at what we've been able to do. Look at what mankind can do. President Trump, when congratulating them, said, humans have really never seen anything quite like what you're doing. It's really special. And, you know, we would agree with this. It is special. It is unusual. It's quite a human achievement. And it's true. We haven't really seen anything like this. Which begs the question, why do we have so much trouble in this sophisticated, technologically advanced world that we're living in? Mr. Armstrong used to talk about all of this progress, working with the material creation, spectacular developments. But none of those developments have shown us the way to solving our very basic, most fundamental problems. So much evil, so much perversion, so much division. We can't solve those problems. I gave you this tweet a while back. The USA is in a vibe shift. It's now the age of heroes, miracles. U.S. hockey team takes gold. U.S. military rescues pilots in Iran. Artemis II travels to the far side of the moon. And she says, Americans can do the impossible. Americans can do anything. There's no stopping America. Genesis 2, verses 16 and 17. These are the instructions, the teachings that God gave to Adam and Eve. The Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die. He said, you're mortal beings. Now I want to give to you eternal life, and I'll show you the way. We have to be willing to keep God's commandments, to follow his instructions. And then God will educate us. God will open our minds to the truth contained in the instruction manual. He'll open our minds. Well, you know what happens in Genesis 3. To this point, God had prevented the devil from approaching our first parents. But in Genesis 3, God allowed. Now, Satan's also an educator. He came in and said, you know, you're not going to die. You've got an immortal soul. You can just do what you want. You decide. And so when Adam and Eve rejected revelation from God, when they rejected the tree of life, you see it in the end of Genesis 3, God cut them off from the tree of life, from true education. Adam and Eve rejected God's revelation. They rejected God's knowledge. And this world has been rejecting it ever since. This world has been going it alone, without God's direction. There's no fear of God in their eyes, like Paul said in Romans 3. So there's this furious pursuit of knowledge, of technology, and yet we can't solve the most basic fundamental problems that exist between fellow man and his neighbor, or nations, family even. I mean, 2 Timothy 3 talks about even natural affection being a thing of the past. Not even being able to love your own spouse, your own family, your own nation. Certainly not God. This is that 2008 Key of David again, clip 14.
Man has virtually destroyed every part of this creation he was intended to beautify and maintain. For 6,000 years, man has experimented with what is right and wrong. He has educated himself in this knowledge, and the result, Mr. Armstrong wrote, quote, humanity has produced also a vast mountain of evils. His fund of knowledge is a mixture of good and evil, true and false. He has produced a civilization full of empty lives, discontent, unhappiness, pain and suffering, crime, immorality, broken homes and family life, corruption, injustice, unfairness, violence, pollution, war, and death. Yet man refuses to believe the results of his own experiment. I mean, the fruits of our experiment is out there, and the experiment has failed. Why? Because there's a missing dimension in that experiment, just like with Adam and Eve.
The whole pattern of human civilization was established right back there in the Garden of Eden. That's where this present evil world started. You can read in the first six chapters of Genesis, you know, how it led to an earth-wide flood. God said the end of all flesh is near. It's in Genesis 6. And then in Leviticus 17, I think it is, Jesus said it's going to be just like the days of Noah in the last days. Another flood of sin, followed by a flood of correction, this time in the form of not an earth-wide flood, but worldwide tribulation, great tribulation. That's what's coming. And Jesus prepared you for this. You're without excuse. If you reject these prophecies and say it's never going to happen, well, you can't very well say that Jesus Christ said it wouldn't happen. He said it will. Everything connects, doesn't it, to the Olivet prophecy. Everything intersects with what Jesus said there on the Mount of Olives. It's amazing. Nuclear Armageddon, I think, was the title of that book we plugged on the Key of David last week. It's at the door. It's at the door, just as Jesus said it would be. Well, that's all we have time for on today's show, if we're going to squeeze in World Watch. So we do appreciate you joining us on the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.
On April 21st, Japan lifted a decades-old ban on selling lethal weaponry to other nations, a move that highlights its rise as a major global military force. After World War II, the U.S. occupied Japan and enshrined Article 9 in its new constitution. This clause was designed to prevent a resurgence of Japanese militarism, banning war as a means for Japan to settle international disputes. Japan's post-war pacifist posture included a ban on most arms exports. In recent years, Japan had eased the arms export restrictions to help nations such as Ukraine, but it still limited such sales. This week's sweeping legal overhaul scraps the remaining limits, allowing Japan to export cutting-edge lethal weaponry to any country that signs defense transfer deals with it. Japan's increasingly militaristic posture may appear reassuring given its alliance with the U.S., but Bible prophecy warns of a coming shift that will align Japan with Russia and China against America. To understand, read Japan's Coming Betrayal of America. American and Israeli attacks on Iran and Iran's subsequent terrorism against civilian energy shipping in the Strait of Hormuz has caused energy shortages and government deficits around the world, the New York Times reported April 15th. The German government will lose $1.9 billion in revenue from lowering fuel taxes for the next 2 months. Canada will lose $1.7 billion from taxes on gas, diesel, and aviation fuels until September. Austria, India, Ireland, Kenya, the Philippines, Poland, and Spain are among the other governments with similar plans and projected shortfalls. Dozens of countries have cut taxes, subsidized energy bills, or given cash relief to their populations at the cost of increasing their national debts. The International Monetary Fund said April 14th that the conflict could cause a global recession and advised governments to take measures to help cut costs for the average consumer. However, the next day, it stated that many nations are simultaneously accumulating unsustainable levels of debt. To learn more about the critical importance of international economies in Bible prophecy, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches America's Economic Collapse. Pope Leo XIV paid Algeria its first ever visit by the head of the Vatican on April 13th, commencing a 10-day visit to West Africa. In Algeria, the Pope proclaimed himself a pilgrim of peace and sympathized with Africa's grievances against colonialism in past generations. Africa is one of Catholicism's fastest-growing regions. In 2023, Africans accounted for a majority of the 16 million people who were baptized into the Roman Catholic Church. Algeria has around 9,000 Catholics and 45 million Muslims, so the visit is largely designed to show respect toward Islam and find ways to work with more moderate Muslims, to resist radical Islamic terrorism, and ultimately to bring the nation into Europe's alliance system. The Pope's visit reaffirms the Catholic Church's interest in Africa. To learn more about Africa's important role in prophecy, read Watch Algeria. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.